Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kristen Lisenby, and my co-host, Kate Ballou.
Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kate Ballou.
And I'm Kristen Lisenby. Happy Ostara, Kate.
Happy Ostara. Does this finally mean that it's spring, Kristen?
I think so. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
But it's so magical to celebrate another turn of the wheel with you and the witch web. So happy spring equinox.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm just so excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. But before we jump into it, let's talk about our listener question for today.
Yes. Punk Rock Kitty wrote in and asked us, does it have to be a full moon to get its full potential energy? Which, I love this question. Kristen, moon phases, thoughts?
Okay, so does it have to be a full moon to get its full potential energy? I want to say of course not, but also maybe.
Both.
I think that moon magic, moon divination is really subjective, and it varies depending on our relationship to the moon and its phases. And generally, I think waxing moon or full moon is a great time for expansive spells, things we want to grow and get bigger, or if we want to be seen. I've heard people say that things, thoughts, ideas, conversations, and people are more forthcoming at this time. So if that's the energy we're going for, doing magic on or around the 3 days closest to the full moon might be wise. But of course, the other phases, waning, dark, and new, also offer their own magical flavor as well. But Kate, I know we both use lunar planners and schedule life according to the cosmos as much as we can. So obviously, you must have thoughts as well.
Absolutely. I always tell people that they can track their own phases, even in just a single sentence for each day. Like, you don't even need a planner, although I do love a lunar planner. And then you can kind of reflect back on those sentences and just see how things shift for you depending on the cycle of the moon and which sign the moon is in, like making sure to denote that somewhere. And this is just a great way, I think, to see and to test what's powerful for you and your magic. And, you know, when you feel the best or the most energized or when you need the most rest, and then you can kind of build your schedule, your work, your processes around these things.
Yeah. And like you said, it's definitely a process because, like all magical workings, experimentation is necessary. And working with the moon in all her phases can teach us so much. Mm-hmm. But what is on the agenda for today?
So today we'll be talking about rituals of the spring equinox. There will be conversations surrounding moon bathing and ancient bathing rituals and working with the ocean in spring.
In the very first season of Magic and Alchemy, we talked folklore and superstition surrounding the vernal equinox, also umansi or egg divination, the return of the rabbit, flower magic, and the drowning of Marzana. And that's in episode 19, if anyone is interested in those topics. And then around this time last year, we were discussing fairy magic in episode 58. So check those out if you're looking for more spring stories and Ostara rituals. In part 3, episode 4 of Netflix's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Sabrina and her coven have mysteriously lost their powers, and they turn to the moon for help. In this Ostara-themed episode titled Chapter 24, The Hair Moon, the coven strips down in the woods, anoints themselves with a potion, a mixture of sacred herbs and angel's blood, courtesy of kitchen witch Hilda Spellman. And then they create a human circle by holding hands and drinking in the full moon's light. Witches have longed to be vessels for the moon's energy and believe our lunar lantern to be a source of psychic inspiration, ancient wisdom, and a cosmic doorway through which we divine with the goddess and other deities. In a spiritual sense, the moon plays a role in our emotional tides, and physically, its gravitational influence tugs and pulls at our oceans and anything made from water, including us, depending on the lunar phase. In this episode of Sabrina, the witches are calling on the moon to literally charge them up with magic, but moonlight is also thought to purify. Themes and spells related to purification often emerge around the spring equinox, which is a complicated word, purification, because it's rather subjective and can mean many different things. I've come to think of purification in terms of energetic clarity and flow, the kind that we generate through grounding and regular rituals of release, followed by restorative and expansive spells. Right now, during Ostara, many of us are doing all sorts of energetic cleansing. Besom in hand, we are sweeping our floors, clearing out cobwebs, and ushering out all the stagnant energy from our homes. We are hanging sun catchers and tending to our gardens, all in the name of washing our hands of winter's bones. Moon baths are great for this, and according to folklore and stories, not only can a moon bath energize and purify, prepare us for a new cycle, but it can also beautify. The Egyptian queen Cleopatra was said to be a fan of ritual baths, and some say that her preferred locations included a place called Cleopatra Beach, near the Egyptian city of Marsa Matruh. Allegedly, this was a private swimming and bathing spot for Cleopatra and her love. There is also a natural spring in the Siwa Oasis in the Western Sahara called Cleopatra's Bath. This bath is a stone pool fed by a natural spring, of which there are several in the area, that can be used for bathing or relaxing. Legend has it that the queen herself claimed this pool as her own, and while I couldn't find any sources that specifically stated Cleopatra partook in moon bathing, you know, as the Egyptians practiced magic and honored the cosmos, and both the beach and the pool I mentioned are outdoors, I'd wager that Cleopatra was a fan of moon bathing. We do know, however, that Cleopatra did like to take milk baths, and if you do a quick internet search, you'll come across all sorts of beautiful modern-day bath blends named after her that include milk, honey, and special herbs. Milk has long been associated with the moon, perhaps partly due to its color, but also because of the joint ties to fertility and motherhood. I was doing some research on Imbolc and February's moon just a little while ago, and I came across a passage that said, as Imbolc neared, signaling the arrival of lambing season, farmers knew most of the lambs would be born around the full moon. They said that the full moon made birthing easier for the animals, and I just really love the overlap here between the full moon, motherhood, and the first fresh milk post-winter. It may come as no surprise that in the ancient Roman world, followers of the huntress and forest dweller Diana would purify and beautify themselves before meeting the moon goddess on her sacred feast days. From an article I wrote for the Little Witch Books blog, quote, "In olden times, Diana's three-day festival was known as Nemeralia, or the Hecataean Ides. This event took place from the 13th through the 15th of August, although many claim Nemeralia aligned with whichever 3 days were closest to the full moon. It was also called the Festival of Torches, as women and girls would march to Diana's shrine at Lake Nemi. They would pass through the sacred grove of trees before reaching her sanctuary at the lake, a volcanic crater nicknamed Diana's Mirror. After paying homage to the Great Mother through prayers written on ribbon and handmade offerings of food and animal statues, observers would wash their hair in the lake and adorn themselves with flowers. End quote. I think this is such a beautiful depiction of moon bathing as a sacred act where through the elements, water from the lake, freshly picked flowers, light from the moon, people can align themselves with a part of the world that is ancient, influential, and steeped in mystery. So, moon bathing energizes, it purifies, it beautifies, and it's also believed to be a divine source of healing. Yogapedia explains that basking in lunar light offers cooling energy. Traditional Chinese medicine calls this yin. Some witchcraft circles might refer to it as receptive or feminine energy. And in the Indian tradition of Ayurveda, moonbathing is used to calm pitta dosha, the bioenergy that regulates metabolism and heat. According to Ayurveda, the practice of moonbathing is beneficial for migraines, hypertension, rashes, hives, and various inflammatory conditions. Moonbathing is also believed to regulate menstrual cycles, increase fertility, lower blood pressure, and reduce the symptoms of stress and anxiety. This article says that moonbathing is beneficial around the time of the full moon, but it also suggests, as we know, each lunar phase offers its own unique benefits. From the same article, it mentions that moonlight also triggers the release of melatonin, a hormone that promotes relaxation and initiates sleep. Since moonlight is a reflection of sunlight, it provides similar benefits, such as boosting vitamin D production, yet in a less aggravating manner. In medical astrology, the moon is linked to the pituitary gland, which is responsible for regulating the follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. Moonbathing can therefore help to balance these hormones, both of which play a part in the release of estrogen. And I don't know about you, Kate, but the logical part of me loves finding these scientific studies to back up what witches and healers have been saying for so long, that the moon is linked to and supports our bodies, especially when it comes to reproductive and sexual health, and it also can influence and encourage dreams by helping our bodies naturally release melatonin. And a fun little synchronicity here, but shortly after we decided to do an episode dedicated to the moon and its magic, I came across an episode from the Addams Family 60s sitcom, which listeners, if you don't know, I've been watching these all for the first time and it's been so much fun. But in this episode, Morticia Gomez and Uncle Fester do some moonbathing. So Uncle Fester is feeling under the weather and Morticia tells him it's likely because he's not getting enough moonshine. The three of them head outside to rejuvenate themselves, but sadly, while Morticia and Gomez are tossing around beach balls, having a wonderful time, the full moon was just too much for Uncle Fester, and he ended up getting a moon burn on the top of his head. And I get a bit giddy when I see moon lore inserted into pop culture, but in a magical but also practical sense. No matter if we are a moon witch, word witch, hedge witch, plant witch, eclectic witch, or something else, we can always think of the moon as a type of accountability partner. Whether or not we partake in moon bathing, although it sounds pretty special, so we might as well, by noting the lunar phases in our journal or our planner or during our meditations or before we cast spells, it can really serve as a reminder to check in with ourselves, also with nature, our moods, our physical well-being. It's a great time to pause and take a breath, look to the direction we're headed, and reevaluate the things we are actively manifesting and calling into our lives. Beyond ancient Rome, Cleopatra, the chilling adventures of Sabrina, the Addams Family, what does moonbathing look like in 2023? You know, besides the obvious but sort of impractical putting a bathtub in your yard, or lying naked in the woods with your coven. So I'd say this ritual can be as simple as taking a walk at night when the sky is clear and the moon is visible. That is moonbathing. Same goes for opening the shades at night. So moonlight streams in through our windows, perhaps while we lay intentions at our altars. For some, moonbathing might look like actually taking a bath or a shower, maybe incorporating some water that you've charged beneath the moon into a ritual bath or shower or hand washing. And of course, we can always go swimming in a lake or another body of water that's absorbing and reflecting the light from our lunar lantern. And this even got me thinking about moonbathing in a creative or like sympathetic sense, like drawing in its essence through working with selenite or moonstone, maybe through a crystal or plant essence. I think meditating on moon imagery, like the crescent moon, which in alchemy is associated with silver and intuition and contemplation, can be really insightful. There's also the three moon symbol that represents the triple goddess and cycles, the different phases of life. And if we like tarot, which I know many of us do, we can always look to the moon card to see what imagery and symbols and stories stand out to us through that relationship. Kate, do you have any thoughts on moonbathing?
You know, I'm always just happy to see the moon here in Brooklyn peeking behind the tall buildings and saying hello. And while I would love to just go and be naked in a field under her glow, like you said, sometimes, you know, I just have to settle for this brief knowing, this little secret exchange between the two of us. But for the city witches, I just love your suggestions about essences and moonstones, selenite, the moon card. There really are just so, so many beautiful ways to work with the moon's rhythms. Judica Isles has a book called Daily Magic, and in it she talks about March 20th being a celebration of the Palooza. She writes, "The Palooza is a festival dedicated to the triad of Isis, Harpocrates, and Serapis. The Harpocrates is the Hellenized name for Horus, the son of Isis and Osiris, while Serapis is a Hellenized syncretic version of Osiris. Together, the triad is a holy family. The Palooza is a day for aspergine, a ritual cleansing via sprinkling. It is the watery equivalent of smoke cleansing, some sort of liquid cleansing agent such as holy water or Florida water is sprinkled over individuals, animals, tools, and space using a branch, a long-stemmed rose, or other tool. The original festival may have involved the use of Nile River water as holy water, and it's a day to meditate on what is your holy water and to honor or concoct it," end quote. So, listeners, if you're feeling called to make moon water, to bathe, or to cleanse, it is just the perfect week for it. In thinking about water and moon baths and the spring equinox, I couldn't help but think about how spring, the season, and spring, a natural bursting forth of water, claimed the same name. The etymology of spring as a noun came from the Middle English spring, S-P-R-Y-N-G, meaning a wellspring, a tide, a branch, a sunrise, a snare, a flock. Further derived from the verb, its sense of the season first came about in a piece of writing predating 1325 in which spring gradually replaced the Old English of Lent, a word which became more specifically liturgical over time. In an essay in Toshin's Witchcraft, Michelle May writes, quote, "The beloved baths of Mother Earth abound in mythology, folklore, and the beautified realms of our tangible existence. From rivers and lakes to springs and wells, the most life-giving element overflows with properties of magic. Many mythical creatures of lore live in or around bodies of water, as do animals, plants, and people. We are drawn to this source for healing, rebirth, purification, and burial. Water moves and is associated with the fluidity of our emotions, connected to and carried by the moon cycles. The moon pulls on oceans, rivers, lakes, and streams, and stirs the abundant water in our bodies. End quote. And so, like the seasons, the waters move. The ancient Roman philosopher Seneca said, quote, "We worship the sources of mighty rivers. We erect altars at places where great streams burst suddenly from hidden sources. We adore springs of hot water as divine and consecrate certain pools because of their dark waters of immeasurable depth." End quote. The ocean is one of these life-giving spaces. Synchronistically, the ocean and the moon are inextricably linked. In a Celtic myth about the beginning of our planet, life starts in the ocean, much like many scientists say. However, in this myth, where the sea met the land, a white mare made of sea foam was born called Ioka. The myth begins, "Once upon a time, there was no time, and that was when there was also no gods and no man walked the surface of the land. But there was the sea, and where the sea met the land, a mare was born, white and made of sea foam, and her name was Ioka." Mythologists Marta Wiggle and Raymond von Over grouped recurring mythological themes and noticed that before anything in myths, a primeval abyss is described alternatively as cosmic pulp, primordial soup, and an infinite expanse of water or space. Originator deities are generally poised above this abyss or live eternally within it and spark creation by stirring the abyss with sounds, words, vibrations, or dreams. The abyss appears in the holy books of the Hindus, the Vedas, which explain that all of the inhabitants of the earth emerged from the primordial sea. Again, at the beginning of the Judeo-Christian story of creation, the Spirit of God stirred above the waters and later created a firmament in the midst of the waters to divide the waters. The Celtic creation myth refers to a time when there were no gods and men, there was the sea. And this is a classic rendition of the primeval abyss where, before anything, was an infinite expanse of water. And it is in the abyss sea foam forms and then emerges. Eventually, Ioka gave birth to the god Cernunnos, and together they created more gods, Moponos, the god of youth, Tauranus, the god of thunder, Tutates, the protector, and the fertility goddess Epona. But when the gods and goddesses were grown up, Ioka left the land to return to her life as a sea mare and became known as Tethra, goddess of the deep. The gods and goddesses then created a man, a woman, and the animals from the bark from the oak tree that grew on the land. But this provoked the sea giants, who then fought a war with the gods. The paradise they had created was destroyed, but eventually the sea giants were beaten, and Epona managed to save just one man and one woman who went on to create human life. In Gallo-Roman religion, Epona was a protector of horses, ponies. Perhaps even where the word pony comes from, maybe, we don't know, donkeys and mules. And she was particularly a goddess of fertility, as shown by the cornucopia, ears of grain, and the presence of foals in her sculptures. She and her horses might have also been leaders of the soul in the afterlife ride. The worship of Epona, quote, "the sole Celtic divinity, ultimately worshipped in Rome itself," end quote, as the patroness of Calvary, was widespread in the Roman Empire between the 1st and 3rd centuries AD, which is unusual for a Celtic deity, most of whom were associated with specific localities. In that book I mentioned earlier, Daily Magic, Judica Iles writes an ocean water cleansing spell for the spring equinox, writing, quote, "Seawater is symbolic of rebirth. As today either coincides with the equinox or is very close to it, it is an excellent day for this ritual, which ideally helps you to embrace new beginnings, whether these involve new projects or a commitment to any type of fresh start. If you have access to the sea, fill a bottle with seawater, perhaps a gallon, but go with what is feasible for you and bring it home. If you lack access to the sea, create a replica of seawater by adding sea salt to spring water. Add this to a bath. You may also incorporate other magical items such as flowers or essential oils, but keep it simple so it does not distract from the sea bath. Ideally, this is accomplished by standing in the bath and either pouring the seawater over your head or ladling it over your body, but you may also add it directly to the bathwater. Visualize whatever blocks your success floating away, leaving you free to achieve your goals and desires. Dry yourself with a clean white towel and ideally put on new clothes, although freshly laundered ones will suffice." End quote. I found this so fascinating for many reasons, but one being that there is a tradition in New York of the polar bear plunge at Coney Island on New Year's Day, where folks dunk themselves in the cold ocean to celebrate a new year. And so perhaps this has more ancient roots than I initially thought. Kristen, any ocean magic as a witch who lives on an island?
Well, I've definitely met people here who tell me that rain, shine, storm, they go swimming in the ocean every single day. And I think that's amazing. I would love to get on that level, but for now, I'm restricting myself to ocean magic during the summer months when the sea is calmer. But like we've been saying, the ocean, the seas really are pure magic. And you don't even have to do anything special other than just like float or maybe even just dip your feet in. Mm-hmm. I know like on previous podcast episodes, I've gone on and on about, you know, how ancient the waters are and how water carries memory. And also how when we're swimming in the seas, we're surrounded by negative ions, which are so good for us, especially if we spend a lot of time plugged into a screen, which I know many of us do. And these negative ions and therefore the ocean have the potential to alleviate stress and energize us and release serotonin, among many other positive things. Plus, I just have to say that, you know, you feel like a mermaid when you're in the ocean, which in my opinion is sort of the definition of magic.
Mm. Yes, I could not agree more. To all of our mermaid magic this spring. And so that concludes our Ostara episode. Kristen and listeners, may you stir the soup of your origin stories, giving way to new gods and goddesses. May you bathe under the light of the moon like Cleopatra. May you call forth a spring, both a spring of life-giving waters and a spring of poetic blossoms, bursting from the seeds that you have sown.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kristen Lisenby and Kate Ballou. You can find us online at Easton Alchemy and at K8Ballou. Send us all of your questions, comments, or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram at Tamed Wild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us for next week's episode when we talk about human design with Xenia Vare. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it, so mote it be or something better. Until next time.